Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, I can't get over it. So low, I can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Jesus' love is very wonderful. Oh, wonderful love. So high, can't get over it. So low, can't get under it. So wide, can't get round it. Oh, wonderful love.
Hello again, and welcome to another Holy Half Hour here on 3TFM with me, the Reverend Alec Noble, Minister of Saltcoats North Parish Church. Tonight we continue with our series of programmes in which we meet ministers, priests and pastors from the various branches of the Christian Church. The one and only Christian Church has many branches in its family tree. The ice cream comes in many flavours. The family contains many different characters and characteristics, with varying styles of worship, outlooks, priorities and ways of thinking and doing things. The point of this series is to gain a better insight and understanding into what makes each other tick. So tonight we welcome a Christian brother, well actually more a father really, Father Matt McManus, indeed the very Reverend Matt McManus, Roman Catholic priest of St. Peter and Chains in Ardrossan. So welcome, Matt, and thank you very much for coming to our 3TFM studios tonight.
Thank you for the invitation, Alec.
So how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Can I just clarify this business, very reverend? Is it your official title or is it just a description, would you say?
I'd say it's my official title. I'm not very anything.
So how long have you been a priest?
I was ordained in Ayr in 1965, so 44 years.
Wow. And where have you been serving all these 44 years then?
First 11 or so years in Ayr, and then out to the country down to Sankar and Kirkconnell, Newcomnock, and then I moved to Kirkcudbright, Kirkcudbright to Kilwinning, and Kilwinning 4 years ago to Ardrossan.
And so how's life as a priest? Does it have its moments?
Well, every life has its moments, but my life has its moments. It's unpredictable. And at times very predictable. It's a time of service and yet brings joy and fulfillment and completion and so on. So how is life as a priest? Well, same as everyone else's life, struggling to get by at times.
I always get asked this as well. Have you always wanted to be a priest?
No, I don't think so. No, when I was young, I think I wanted to be a doctor and... But somehow, around the age of 18 or 19, the idea was in my head. And I thought, if I don't try, I'll never know. So I'm still trying.
You know, different clergy get different names. Ministers, pastors, priests. Why are Roman Catholic clergy called priests?
I haven't the faintest idea. Now that you put the question to me without any warning, I have no idea. Obviously the name is familiar from Old Testament times and so on. It is a class of people set apart from the community to offer worship and to proclaim, in our case, the gospel. So I don't think the name matters very much, and it's purely an English name. It's not used in other parts of the church.
I thought you might be quoting to me Latin about pontifex and...
No, that's...
Bridge builder.
No, but then that wouldn't quite fit, but it wouldn't be far away.
Right, so I've asked you, Matt, to bring some music, and your first selection is appropriately from a group that's called The Priests.
It is.
So can you tell us more about them? What's the background to this?
Well, it's a fairly recent phenomenon, and I don't know whether they brought the record out or the CD out last year for the Christmas market, but... It was certainly everywhere for a while, and of course I got it as a Christmas present. I listened to it. The track I chose, Be Still My Soul, means that in the midst of a fairly troubled and busy world, we need moments of stillness. So, Be Still My Soul.
So, we're interviewing tonight the Very Reverend Matt McManus from St. Peter and Chains in Ardrossan. So, Matt, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where were you born?
Actually, I was born in Rutherglen, but never lived there for any length of time. You have to think of wartime and so on, in late 1940. Family moved to Girvan. My parents had a house in Girvan, but lived in Rutherglen. So we moved to Girvan, and when the war ended, my twin sister and I and my younger brother and older brother were all coming up school age, and so they decided we would stay in Girvan. So I was brought up in Girvan, went to school in Girvan, primary school and then secondary school. So that's where I come from.
And when you left school, did you go to college or something?
Yes, well, when I left school, I did what everybody else does nowadays, hung about for a little while, had a place at university, but decided that training for the priesthood was probably what I wanted to do. The advice I got from various people was useful, you know. You must try it if that's what you want to do. You must try. And if it's not for you, then you'll discover it's not for you and you can do something else. Mm-hmm. So I spent my 6 years of seminary training in the Borders down near Melrose, right, where the college was. I think in those days the idea was you keep as far away from real people as you can. Now, how that could be a good training, I don't know, and we don't do that nowadays. But it didn't do me a lot of harm. But the training was straightforward, and did a theology degree.
So it was quite a culture shock coming out of living in a, what kind of background was it?
It was in a sense a culture shock. Yeah. I mean, but you know, the biggest culture shock was when I was ordained and let loose on the public. I came across situations I really knew nothing about, because I had two parents who cared about me, and my father worked and my mother stayed at home and so on. I mean, mm-hmm. Think of it, you're talking the 1960s, but I came across, almost for the first time in my life, broken families and families struggling and unemployment and so on. So there's the culture shock.
Yeah. You go back to way back in your childhood. Were you thinking about being a priest from early years?
No.
Were you brought up in the Roman Catholic Church?
Yes, my parents were Catholic. It was the logical thing for me to be Catholic. And at those days, at my age, I simply went along with what my parents did. That's how it was. As the years go past, you start to question things, but then there are things you never really question. My attitude to church and so on, it still bears hallmarks, I'm sure, of my parents. It's something they passed on to me.
Yeah, so it's been a gradual spiritual journey, gradual growth. Did you have any particular outstanding moments when you had the flash of inspiration or blinding light from hand from the sky?
Absolutely not. Yeah. Uh-huh. I keep thinking it might happen,
yeah,
and then I wouldn't know what to do with it if it did. But no, it seemed to me to be as natural almost as the air I breathe, and I've never really questioned that this is what I want to do. I think I'm smart enough to say if it wasn't what I wanted to do, I would go do something else.
Yeah,
left it a bit late, but you know.
Yeah. Well, your next piece of music is entitled Christ Be Our Light by Bernadette Farrell. Is there a particular significance for you in that track?
I think she sings beautifully, but I chose it because if we are not doing what we do for Christ, then why do it?
Christ be our light.
Well, Matt, we've been talking a bit about yourself personally, but the main reason we had you in tonight is to give us a wee insight into the Roman Catholic Church tradition. So let's think about Roman Catholic worship. If somebody walked in off the street into one of your services, what do you think would hit them? What would they see and hear?
Difficult sort of question, but they would hear worship in English, and a few years ago it would have been in Latin. And when it was in Latin, it was very structured and unchanging. Over the last 20 years or so with English, you then get a variety of voices and you get a variety of input.
And in the old days, it was stressed how uniform it was across the world, wasn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely. But even within the one country, it was fairly uniform. I was thinking about it this morning because I'm trying to arrange a funeral, and the choices of music that people are making, whether I think it's appropriate or inappropriate or whatever, that wouldn't have happened 20 or 30 years ago. Liturgy was fixed. Is it better as it is now? Yes, of course.
So there's a conscious policy to celebrate the diversity as opposed
Absolutely.
To the unity.
Absolutely. But what would people be aware of? If they came to St. Peter's, one of the things they'd be aware of was so many children, and noisy children at that. I hope nobody who's got a noisy child is listening. What else would they... They'd be struck, I hope, by the light as opposed to the solid. I think they would be struck by involvement. I would hope that they would feel immediately welcome and belonging and those kind of concepts, because those are the things we work at.
Is it much more informal? Is that what you're meaning?
Yes, but not just informal. It can't be too informal because you're dealing with centuries-old traditions and beliefs, and those are not informal. But it must be presented in a fairly up-to-date way and not gimmicky. And yet
you're trying to marry the traditional and the modern.
That's exactly what we're trying to do. But isn't every denomination trying to do that?
Yes. And within every tradition as well, you get probably high church and low church.
Well, I'm hoping we're middle church.
Middle
but,
church.
I know exactly what you mean, because you're constantly struggling to find a balance between eternal truths and frail human beings who are reaching out to those things, and somewhere Jesus bringing himself into the lives of people.
It's a fascinating subject for all denominations, the holding all these tensions and these balances.
Absolutely.
Can you say any more about what would be particularly distinctive Roman Catholic elements in worship? Things you might not get in another church?
Well, we're a sacramental community, and therefore we celebrate Eucharist almost every time we gather. We gather to celebrate the Eucharist. We gather to listen to God's word. Now, those elements are common to most Christian denominations. It's part of the Christian tradition. But we probably celebrate Eucharist far more.
Why do you celebrate communion every Sunday?
Because we feel that that's what's asked of us, and that celebration of the Eucharist is what makes us what we are. We would not be Catholic if we were not attempting to participate in the life, death and resurrection of Jesus.
Is there never a service when you don't?
Oh yes, communion. Oh yes, 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 of course. We have celebrations of the word. We have celebrations of baptism. We have celebrations of other aspects of our life. We have from time to time Marian celebrations when we give honour to Mary, the Mother of God. And we are very conscious of the fact that we cannot and do not worship Mary, but she is the Mother of Jesus. And therefore she is, in a sense, a very extraordinary and special member of the community of people who believe in Jesus.
Just on that, from the outsider looking in, you seem to make an awful lot of fuss about Mary. I mean, there are other Bible characters who were remarkable characters and different parts to play. Why is Mary so prominent?
I think because of her motherhood of Jesus. And I think within our tradition, the honour due to mothers is enormously important. We're clear enough in our own minds, obviously, about the fatherhood of God. Perhaps we would feel it lacking if we didn't have a mother figure, but not divine, not God, but human, with all sorts of human characteristics of love and affection and care. Can a mother forget the child of her womb? So Mary, the mother of Jesus, very important to us.
Well, we've just set up the next song, haven't we?
Of course we have. That's where we were going.
So this is the priest singing Ave Maria, and this is to give you a flavour of Roman Catholic music.
Thank you.
I'm interviewing Father Matt McManus, a Roman Catholic priest at Ardrossan, St. Peter's in Chains. I'd just like to ask you, in the time we have remaining, a few quick sort of questions about the Roman Catholic tradition. Why do you have incense?
Why do we have incense? Mm-hmm. Well, that's a throwback from Old Testament times. Our prayers should rise like incense before God. I've kept the tradition going, and in the early church they used incense an awful lot, simply because people didn't wash too often and you had to keep the place smelling nice and all of those things. Seriously. But it's part of our giving praise and worship to God. And we don't use incense nearly as much as you think we might. Mm-hmm. You'd be hard to find it.
Your Roman Catholic Church is famous for its crucifixes.
Yes.
The Protestants say Jesus is risen, he's not on the cross anymore.
Yes.
So
yes.
Why
yes.
do you have so many crucifixes?
We have crucifixes simply to remind us that Jesus died for us. Now, I think we would always have to add as a rider to that, Jesus has died and is risen. And in all our liturgical worship, we say, Jesus has died for us, Jesus is risen, and Jesus will come again. And in a sense, the crucifix becomes shorthand, because it's not nearly so easy to depict resurrection and second coming, but simply to look at Jesus on the cross and to know that he died and rose again is our theology.
And could I ask about saints? You know, every Sunday your prayers, you pray to the saints or through the saints?
No, we give honour to the saints, and in a sense, yes, we pray through the saints. We don't pray to saints. Saints are members of our community who have lived their lives well and are presented to the rest of the community as examples of goodness. People like Francis and Teresa and people like that who are simply good examples to the rest of the community for us to imitate. And all prayers that refer to saints always refer to them as the people who have passed safely through this world and whose lives should be an example to us.
And if I can lump a few things together, from the outside looking in, excuse the word, if I call it twiddly bits, there seems to be a lot of extra little things, like you cross yourselves,
we
you
do.
Kneel, you have stained glass,
we do.
Fancy
we,
robes.
We use holy water.
Uh-huh.
People coming into church would dip their hand in holy water, which is simply blessed. It says, Father, thank you for the gift of water which brings life and freshness to the earth. May it always remind us of our baptism. So each time people come into church, they take water on their hands and bless themselves, make a cross on themselves to remind them of baptism.
Could I ask about celibacy in priests? The Roman Catholic tradition is famous for that compared
yes.
to other churches.
Yes.
Why is celibacy so important?
I'm not sure why it's so important, just as a straightforward thing. It is our tradition, and it's a tradition that one accepts. When I sought ordination to the priesthood, I knew that one of the conditions for that was celibacy. I prayed in those days that I would be able to live up to that. I've always been a firm believer that if you wouldn't make a good husband and you wouldn't make a good father, then you'd never make a good priest. And when I was involved in the training of students for the priesthood, my attitude of mind was very much that. If this guy's not going to make a good husband, if this guy's not going to make a good father, then he's not going to make a good priest. Mm. So it's not a cop-out. It is sacrifice. It is a profession that the things of God are so important that all other considerations, good as they are, should be left aside.
And changing to a completely different subject, we hear a lot about the Roman Catholic Church being very anti-abortion. Is that fair to say? The Roman Catholic Church en masse is anti-abortion.
Well, we have a firm belief that a conceived child is a conceived child and must be protected. And the argument being women saying it's my body and so on. You can never argue against that. Of course it's their body. But they didn't create that child. And that child has a body of his or her own. So what right has someone to... And this whole concept of the protection of the innocent who is going to protect this unborn child?
And is there a sort of party line from the Pope down? You have to all toe this line, and or is there some discretion?
Come on, Alec. Do I look like a line tore? I'm there because I want to be there, and I'm saying what I want to say.
No, but one of the differences being being a priest is the hierarchical system, whereas other churches don't have.
Although that's true.
Life's
yes, we
not as simple as that.
No, we do. No, absolutely not as simple as that. And we do have a hierarchical structure, because we genuinely believe that Jesus chose his disciples and Peter as the leader of those disciples, and that tradition has simply carried on. And we are not a democracy. You know, if all my parishioners tomorrow voted for something, I would just have to wave at them and thank them and move on. You know, we are not.
Yeah. Well, Matt, thank you very much for coming into the studio tonight. I'm sorry our holy half hour's run its course. In fact, we're slightly over, I think. But it's been lovely chatting with you, and thanks for sharing your views and giving us a better insight into the Roman Catholic outlook and tradition. So, what's your big finish, your last piece?
It's not a big finish in the sense, but I had said to you that the Eucharist is the centre of our lives. So, chosen this Panis Angelicus, bread of angels shared with men.
Oh,